Lecker, das Tor ist leer. Alles oder nichts. Das komplette Fleisch ist aus dem Grill, auf dem Grill die Ecke kommt. Und er ist drin! Und er ist drin! Der absolute Wahnsinn! Der VfB Stuttgart bleibt in der ersten Fußball-Bundesliga. Schiebt sich vor.
Welcome to VFB Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language VFB Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. This is episode 99. We are your hosts, Travis and Matt. You can reach us on all the social media platforms that are out there. Matt, I want to get into this before we even get started, is that last week we had Gary Preston, who does a great job. This week we had Derek Ray, who does a great job. So the biggest thing that I found out of this match was last week you talked about how Gary called Anthony Rouleau, our center back, who's playing great and who had the assist on the first goal, with the rolled R's, whereas Derek Ray said it more like Rouleau. So which of those do you prefer? Which do you like better? I mean, you've got Rouleau or Rouleau. What do you go with?
I'm gonna go with Derek Ray by a nose, just because I think Ray's is probably more authentic, and I know pronunciation's down. And also, I suck at rolling my R's, so take that, Gary.
Yeah, Gary, you're off the program now. Although, if you're free, feel free to join us.
Yeah, big fan.
Yeah, we love you, buddy. We didn't mean anything we just said. Part one, we got some shout-outs here. So Derek Ray almost had it. All he needed was Sven to get our first ever VFB bingo. He had Nagelsmann. He had Champions League. He had VFB were champs as recently as 2007. And Seiru's record. Wasn't able to get Sven, though. So pod predictions, Jeff won this week, Matt, with a 4-2-3 record. The rest of us really had a rough week, 2-2-5. So Austin's still in the lead, just above you. I kind of want to give you the floor on this next one, the VfB Frauen. Give our listeners an update on exactly how amazing they're doing right now.
So I've been checking in on them via Twitter, and I loaded up the Tweety app this morning and looked. It was like, okay, the game's starting. And then the very next post was like 13 minutes in. Frauen have already scored. Like, wow, that was fast. A couple posts later, 16 minutes in, Frauen have already scored. A couple posts later, 30 minutes, Frauen have scored. I was like, good gracious. These women are just hammering goals in. And it felt like with that game, from what I saw, they got to halftime and then just went, this is good, right? We're good. Yeah, we're fine. It's yeah. To put off the gas.
Yeah, they beat TSV Neckarau. 3-0, Kopp and Tomaj scored the goals in this one. They are undefeated, 6-0 in first place in the Oberliga. So good for them. They're just doing a fantastic. Speaking of fantastic, some former Valbiers played. So Gildias, he played 36 minutes in a Warsaw loss, unfortunately. Juan Pereira, who's on loan, played 45 minutes in a Hansa loss. Kalajic scored the winner for Wolverhampton in the 88th minute. Of course, he only came on in the 82nd minute. Aurel Mangala played 90 minutes in a Nottingham draw. A old friend, Borna Sosa, sports friend, had two assists for Ajax. And, oh, my gosh, they're in the relegation place in a loss. And then I feel bad even saying this, but old friend Mark Oliver Kempf had a red card in the Hertha Berlin loss. And Timo Baumgartel played 90 minutes in Schalke's loss. The reason I bring those two up is I want to get your quick thoughts on how Hertha Berlin and Schalke are doing. One of them is 11th place. Schalke's in 16th place. They are 5 points adrift already. I mean, goodness gracious, to use your phrase, we lost to these two teams last spring. And now one of them is in danger of being relegated to the third league. What's happening?
That Berlin doesn't surprise me a whole lot. Despite them beating us, I always felt like they were a deeply flawed team and just we were that bad and that unlucky at the time. Schalke is the one that really shocks me. I felt like they were kind of unlucky last season and just had sort of a rough go of it. I figured they'd be at the top of the second division, come right back up. That's kind of their history, the yo-yo club. To see them completely down in the dungeon of the second division is really, really kind of unnerving.
It's weird because they had a coach in Reese who I thought was a really good coach, and they had a player in Simon Tirota who we all love. And
yeah,
he was pulled out after the first 45 minutes today. They couldn't find a coach for a couple of weeks after they fired their Reese. And then this is, I don't know if you heard this, their logo sponsor, the $3 million they're getting is requisite on them getting promoted. And the shoulder sleeve sponsor they have just announced bankruptcy. So, I mean, but for the grace of Fritzl, there go I, right? I think that's in the Bible or the Quran or somewhere like that. So, Balham asked a really good question. Who would you like to see go up if Hamburg goes up finally after 5 years? Because it looks like Hamburg is on their road. So, I think St. Pauli's in first, Hamburg's in second, and I believe Kiel is in third. So, who would you like to see go up to the Bundesliga next year along with Hamburg?
You know, they're down the table a little bit at ninth, but Nuremberg is a team that I've had a little bit of a soft spot for. Got to go see their stadium and training grounds, and it's in a historic part of a very historic city. So that would just be kind of cool to be a neat Bundesliga venue. Greuther Fürth is always just, it's fun to say. And American Julian Brandt is on their team, so would be kind of fun to see him come back, or Julian Green. Sorry, fun to see him come back up. But otherwise, I don't care. I'm not worried about the bottom of the table this year.
It is a strange world in which we live, Matthew. It is not. I would love to see St. Pauli come up. They seem to be a fun club that sticks to their guns, whatever their policy or their beliefs are. So that would be kind of fun. But it is a bizarre place to be, like you said, where we're not too worried about that side of the table, you know, at this point.
I do mad respect for the St. Pauli fan culture, and they're a pirate themed team, and I'm pro pirate, so yeah, let's bring them up and have some fun.
The OFC Fantasy, Jens won with 150 points. He's in second place behind Village Footy. Give those guys a listen on the Twitter machine. Those guys are great. So after 8 weeks, it's Village Footy in first. The Tip Spiel, Passmaster won with 21 points. It's his second win. Doug and Rob were in second, but Stefan is in first overall with Peter from Valpi, Omaha, one of our fan clubs, in second with Kai Guy out in Iceland in third, right behind. The OFC Man of the Match, this is the first time, Matt, in a long time that it was an actual vote, because Seiru has just been hogging this thing for a while. And this one came down to, there were eight players that got votes, which I think is awesome, actually. Who was your man of the match before we reveal who the OFC man of the match was?
Well, first, I thought Ruo was super impressive playing it right back. I was surprised to see him there in place of Stenzel, but he did fantastically well. And as you said, had an assist on the first goal. But I think the guy stirring the Palo Bay drink this week was Stiller. He's just kind of everywhere. He's doing a little bit of everything, making stuff happen in all parts of the pitch. He's been one of my favorite guys to watch lately.
I was able to watch the match a couple extra times just because I had some downtime. You're right. He's everywhere. And he is just playing such a role. And the announcers mentioned it during the match about how he and Otto are just the engine and the heart of this team. For me, it was Anton. I loved the way he was playing defense. I loved the way he was getting in the face of anybody who just tried to get in the face of one of our players. And I loved the way that he was just being a leader in the back there. However, we were both wrong. That's why democracy is amazing. Silas, with 8 votes, beat out Alex Newbell with 6 votes. You okay with that?
You know what? It was so gratifying to see Silas get a goal and get off that kind of schneid he's been on. Yeah, absolutely. Take man of the match. Good on you, young man.
Yeah, speaking of the match, Matt, let's dive into part two. Two weeks ago, we talked about how we were going on the road to what was our bogey team. And I love this. Derek Ray, we love you so much. It was our first win against him in 10 tries. He gave us a new word called Angstgegner, which in German means fear opponent, but is basically bogey team. So Angstgegner, I just love that. So Derek Ray, you know, once again, thank you for that. I'm guessing Gary, Matt would roll a couple of the R's in that.
At least 7 or 8 of them.
They were on a weird run of form, the worst ever form they've been on in their Bundesliga, you know, short career. They've now lost 8 in a row, but they had their full roster back. Now, I predicted a draw on this one. I thought that we would get a result, but I didn't think that we would come away with 3 points. You predicted 3 points in this one. So thoughts going into this one, you seem much more optimistic than I did.
It is hard for me right now to pick against VfB. We're just rolling, firing on all cylinders, and Union's been struggling. Mm-hmm. And in general, I tend to pick by table position and then look at home versus away. And if they're really close, go with the home team. We're not anywhere close on the table. And Union's winless in as far back as the Google table is showing me right now. They cannot seem to get their fit together. And I think it was 50 plus donor said on Twitter that it looks like they brought a bunch of new players in that don't fit their system and are confused as to why it's not working.
I'm glad you brought that up, because this kind of goes into something I'm going to bring up later. They usually play a very physical style of play, sit back, get you on the counter in the break. And they had some really big signings over the course of the summer. But I think 50 plus owner nailed it, is that whatever their culture is, I don't know them well enough to say that they're breaking away from that, but it seems like they're struggling to maintain what it is to be the Eisen, right? The Iron. Mm-hmm. And be a team that's playing in the Champions League. And this is something you and I will get into later, is the struggle between following whatever your belief is, but also having to have a club that is deep enough to play multiple matches, right? Because they're playing Champions League matches and Bundesliga matches. We're just playing Bundesliga matches. So advantage us, I guess, right?
Yeah, big advantage us. It's always the concern that you have when you make Europa League or Champions League is you've got all these extra matches. Do you have the depth to cope with it? And you've got to fill that depth while also maintaining your identity as a club. And it feels like Union has filled the depth with guys that don't align to the club identity. And then you got to change identity. And that's hard. And especially to do that mid-season, it's really, really hard.
Yeah, especially when they've got a manager in Fischer who's been there forever. But let's get into the VfB part of this, is the lineup. So I was a little surprised when I saw the lineup come out. Ito was out and Mittelstadt was in. So Stenzel had to sit. And so I kind of want your thoughts on this. So my thoughts were, okay, I was surprised at first, but I read that Ito was nursing a back problem, so he wasn't able to play a full 90. And so I was wondering, Stenzel got torched by old friend Thiago Tomás last time against Wolfsburg. But in terms of offensive play, he's one of the best right backs in the Bundesliga, which is bizarre. For those of us that have watched Pascal Stenzel over the last few years, no offense, Pascal. So I almost wondered if it was a domino effect. If you took Hiroki out and put Mittelstadt in, who I disagree with the announcers. I think he's more of a defensive presence than an offensive presence. I think Hiroki has more offensive play in him. Do you have to take Stenzel out because you're almost doing a domino effect where you're putting Mittelstadt in, so you have to put in a more defensive player in Rouleau? What are your thoughts on that? Were you surprised at all by the lineup or Mittelstadt versus Stenzel?
I was a little surprised by it. I've been waiting for both of these guys to get a start because we've got a roster that I was thinking a lot about this during the game. At the beginning of the season, we were saying how thin the roster is. And a number of the guys who are second, third choice players have really stepped up and are outperforming what our expectations were at the beginning of the season. So we've got Mittelstadt, we've got Rouault, and while I don't think Mittelstadt's better than Ito at this point, he's a good enough substitution. And I think Rouault is making a case that he's maybe better than Stenzel. And so I think probably the Mittelstaden for Ito may have had a little bit to do with it. I think probably as much Stenzel getting torched last week by Tomas had something to do with it. And it's just Hona saying, hey, we're going to give somebody else a chance. You had a rough one. Take a breather and we'll see how things are going. And it could be that if they're neck and neck in practice, or Rouault's maybe outplaying him just a little bit in practice, that one game could have been enough to be, let's make a change and see what happens.
Yeah, and Millsaps looked great whenever he's gone in. And plus, I wonder how much this played into it. He played for Hertha Berlin for so many years, and he mentioned after the match how this particular game was a big deal for him personally because of the Hertha versus Union aspect. And I don't know how much that played into it, but it was good to see him. The Rouault thing is interesting because Volgamut, hats off to him for finding this kid and getting this kid. It almost makes me go, okay, all the people that hated Sven, I get it a little bit. But one of the big criticisms was, oh, we have too many French players. Well, between Daxo, Anthony, Seyrou, Enzo, I'm sorry. That's where some of the best players in the world are right now. I don't think that's a problem. So it was interesting to see him in there. So let's jump into the game. And even though our good friends ESPN Plus crashed out from the 45 minute to almost the 60 minute mark, let's see if we can break this down a little bit. So the talking points that I kind of found today were Seyrou, the physicality, luck, leveling, and the team. So let's start with Seyrou. First off, I apologize to everybody. I can't spell his name right to just get. I always put the H before the R. So from this point forward, I'm just going to do it correctly. So thank you to all of those who reached out to me. His opening goal was amazing. Speaking of opening goals, he's now the opening goal on the ESPN highlight reel before the matches start when you log on. What I loved about his goal was he set the whole thing up. He held up the ball, passed it to Rouault. Then you could see him telling Rouault, cross it to me, cross it to me. Sprinted past the Union defense before they even had a chance to do anything about it, and put the ball in the back of the net. We've talked a ton about Guirassy. We'll talk more about him because he's going to be gone. But I mean, Matt, come on, this guy, 14 goals in this few matches. It's bonkers.
He's scored more in 8 games than any player in Bundesliga history has. He's scored the second most in 8 games of any player in UEFA in history. The only person with more is one gentleman you may have heard of, Cristiano Ronaldo. So Guirassy is breathing some rarefied air right now. And it seems like he can do no wrong. He's got a team around him who believes in him and is lifting him up. And as we talked about before, it's like he gets ex as excited for them as they get for him. And he's making these calls. Hey, I'm going to give you the ball, give it right back to me. And that's an unselfish play that shows trust in your teammate. And they have trust in him too. They know if they give him the ball in a good spot, it's likely to be a goal. And here we were again.
What I loved about that, about what you said, is that the way he celebrated with Rouault was just amazing. And the way that Daxo and some of those guys who I think are veterans, but they're actually not. This is a really young team. They mentioned it on the broadcast how this is one of the youngest teams in the Bundesliga. The average age is around 25. He is giving as much credit to those who are feeding him the ball as he is himself. And it's awesome. Awesome to watch. What wasn't awesome to see, I watched it a couple times just to see where the injury took place. A couple Union guys did kind of hit him, but initially when he was hit on a play about 6, 7 minutes later, it was his other leg that they hit, but maybe he moved in a weird way. He does come up banged up to where before 30 minutes are even completed, he has to get pulled out. We'll talk about this, the impact of this going forward later in the program. But as you were watching that match, how did you feel when, uh-oh, the trainers are going to this guy?
Immediately, heart in my stomach or heart in my throat. Just this is terrible. It's not good. On the replay, I'm with you. I think he got tangled up a little bit with some guys, but I don't think anybody did anything malicious on him, or even he didn't even really seem to crash. My hope is that the coaches pulled him because they said, hey, we're one up on this team that's terrible. We've got Undav, who's been playing really well. We feel like we can weather this, and we're going to get him out early and not risk aggravating this further. And that's why he got pulled when he did, and he'll sit for a week or two, and then he'll be back rolling. My concern is that anytime a player gets a non-contact injury, I start thinking major muscle tear, ligaments, something real bad. The official report out was that it was a muscle tear. Hopefully it's something real minor, and a little bit of rest, a little bit of attention from the trainers, he'll be back at it.
Yeah, I fear what you're fearing is that if you watch it, you can see that at some point he raises his hand. He says, I got to get out of here. And so mm-hmm. he knows he's 27 years old. He's played quite a bit. So I think he knew when his body was letting him down and said, I've got to sit this out. After the contact with the Union players, you can see he makes a run towards the Union goal. And then immediately after that, he kind of pulls up and starts, you know, holding his left hamstring, which is why I love kind of the German medical staff is like, when he lays on the ground, the announcers were like, well, it looks like his thigh, but they were working on his hamstring. And then when the announcement came out, they said, well, he has an injury to his behind his thigh. And I'm like, well, that's his hamstring, right? So I'm pretty sure it's a hamstring pull is what it is. So it sounds like it's a tear. So it sounds like he might be out for about 2 to 4 weeks, which is basically the entire month of November, which is a huge, huge bummer. But I felt the same way you did. You know, let's just keep talking about the match. Is that it's like, oh no, he's out. How are we going to recover from this? But that kind of gets to my next point, which is the physicality in the defense. Union was playing really hard, almost too hard. I mean, 4 minutes in, Enzo lost his shoe. He got kicked, you know, by Union player. But I want to turn this around. It is something we mentioned 2 weeks ago, is that it seems like this club is able to play against that type of style. Our defense seemed to step up, whether it's Angelo and Ada being kind of the heart of the defense, as the commentators mentioned. Anton was on the kicker team of the week this week. And when Rouleau got into it around the 32nd minute after a foul, Anton and the entire team had his back. I thought Daxo played really well. Ito had 2 goal line saves at the 85th minute mark. Alex Neubel was really aggressive, had a really nice save in the second half. There's a lot here that I'm talking about physicality and defense, but as much as we gripe about Union, and by we, I mean mostly you, because you hate Union.
Guilty.
It seemed like the first 10 minutes, they were like, we're just going to pound you guys, but we were able to respond to that. And that's not what we've seen the last 5, 6, 7 years from this club.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before with other matches where, you know, we typically will get out physical, and that it's just not happening to us this year. And it's not that we're pushing back. We do have Papa Bear in the back, our captain sticking up for everybody and crushing all comers who dare get in his face. But also, like, we go, okay, yeah, run at us. We're going to move. And then we're going to go score. So you keep doing what you keep doing. We're going to keep dodging, and then we're going to hit you where it hurts.
It's a strange juxtaposition, because I love what you said. Yeah, Papa Bear's in the back. And Daxo is a young 23, I think. But it seems like he's the dad of the team. And Valdemar Anton is kind of the mom of the team. And by that, I mean, you and I are both parents. It's like the dad can say things, but it's the mom who actually controls the family. And yeah, it seems like Daxo is the one who is just having fun and is like, all right, we got to do this. But Valdemar is the one who is kind of keeping everybody under grips and all that stuff. Those are two intimidating presences in the back. When the ESPN broadcast did finally come back on, the first part of the game that you saw was Daxo jumping on the top of some Union player and the Union player crumpling to the ground. And it was a foul on Daxo. But I think the message was sent to that guy is like, okay, I'm going to back off on him.
Yeah, Dax was also 10 feet tall, so he can just stand in front of a guy and look menacingly at him, and that guy's going to think twice about what his next move is.
That's a good point. But the third thing I want to talk about is luck. So in the 78th minute, Union missed a potential layup, which is something I think you and I are familiar with because this is the way that we used to see matches. And our schedule hasn't been super impressive up to this point. So are we a product of luck to have this many points this far into the season, or are we this good? I mean, we're Val Bay supporters, so it's hard for us to say that we're that good. Where's your thoughts on this?
There's a saying that you can only play the teams that are put in front of you. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to knock the team for not playing better teams or playing the teams that they're scheduled that are in the league that they play in. And it is what it is. The only team we've played that has knocked us on our butt is Leipzig. We've played everybody else that's been in front of us, even or better. And that includes Hoffenheim, who are currently sitting in sixth place, just one spot behind Leipzig. So I'm not down with the haven't played anybody line. We may have seen more of the lighter end of the schedule than the heavy, and we'll learn more about the team in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think this team, while it's definitely got some flaws, it's legitimately good. And the flaws that we have aren't backbreaking, crippling flaws like a goaltender with severe ADD who forgets he's playing in the middle of the game, or an offense built around crossing into a 7 foot tall Austrian who's now playing in England. Like, we've got a structure and a philosophy that matches the players on the roster, and the players on the roster are playing up to their potential. And as we said earlier, well beyond where we thought they were going to be at this point in the season.
Well, even Derek Ray said, he's like, I predicted them to finish 11th. And these color commentators like, well, Derek, if you said 11, you actually meant 14. And he laughed, which meant he actually did. But you and I predicted somewhere around 13. And now, I mean, that seems light years away. It's weird having to apologize for how good we're playing right now. It's just, it's not a world we're used to.
See, I refuse to apologize for it. I'm wallowing in it and soaking in every ounce of this. It's amazing.
We are.
The other thing Derek said is when he said, yeah, I picked them 11th, he said, Bala Bay fans reached out to me and said, are you sure? Like, he probably meant us.
I know. That was an unofficial shout out. I'm going to count that. The next thing I want to talk about is leveling in particular. So is he ready for prime time? So he had a chance in the 8th minute, 19th minute, 9th minute. He had some really good opportunities, but in the final third, it seems like he's just lacking the decision making. And I'm going to compare him to Chris Furich, actually. It 2 years ago, there were a lot of people who were Val Bay supporters who were ready to ship this guy out of town. And now he's on the German national team, and now he's got 5 assists, and he's one of the top players in the Bundesliga who plays his position. It's just some guys need time, and that's our DNA, right? Is the Jung in Veld. So on a team this good, though, I think this is what is different. You can allow somebody like Leveling to have those mistakes because he can kind of grow into the position, which kind of going back to the last statement we had, isn't a position we've been in the last 4, 5, 6 years. We've had to get every point we could possibly get. Now we could actually put a guy out there who is learning the trade because he's surrounded by all these actually legit players now. So I'm talking about Leveling specifically, but I'm also talking about in general, kind of the young guys. So what are your thoughts on him, or just this idea of, should we be hard on him? Should he sit? Should we put Silas back in? What do you think?
I wasn't really impressed at all by Leveling. There was large stretches of the game that went by that I kind of forgot he was even out there, which is something good when you're talking about central defenders, is not good when you're talking about attacking wingers. So that wasn't great. I don't think he's the choice over Silas right now, but we've talked repeatedly about how the bright role for Silas might be as that late substitution guy when he can really leverage his speed against a tired defense. So if Loveling can hold his own and eat some minutes, that's a win. And really taking some miles off of Silas doesn't hurt at all. And maybe he starts a couple games and Loveling starts a couple games. And it, I think there's some truth to what you're saying, that we can allow him to learn on the job because we don't have to count on him to cash in every opportunity. There's also, like, it does give us the benefit to be able to say, hey, buddy, go out there and give it a shot. See how you do today. And it takes some pressure off of these kids too. I wonder how much of this success that Furich is seeing is because he doesn't feel like every touch he makes has to go in the back of the net.
I think that's a huge point. And I think that's a point we haven't been able to have since the first year we got promoted when Reno was here, is we were able to have fun and we played really attractive football. And that's exactly what we're doing now. We're having fun. We're playing attractive football and we're able to get guys on the pitch and to try things. And you can't do that when you're in a relegation scrap. If your minds are Cologne right now, you have to go with veterans who know how to try to get points. We're in this really nice spot where we can throw a kid out there and see what happens. And I like what you said. This segues to our next point is team. You mentioned Silas. So when Silas scored that goal, it was actually super heartwarming because first off, it was amazing. As Peter out in Valpy, Omaha, one of our OFC fan clubs said, it was glad to see Silas get that goal. I think all of us smiled almost as much as he smiled when he got it. I loved his celebration where I want to say, and I don't know this, when he hit his wrist where your watch would usually be, it was like the about time celebration. That's kind of the way I saw it. What really warmed my heart was seeing everybody go to him. And I mean all the players on the pitch, but the guys who have been subbed off, Chris Furich, who was healthy, but also watching Daxo go down there and watching a hobbling Seyrouj Karasi go down there and celebrate with him. I mean, this is a team, Matt. We've seen Genki Haraguchi, you know, when Seiru wasn't able to cash in a couple of those, go to him and kind of joke around with him. But there was just that really nice picture too after the match where Daxo, who is 10 feet tall, like you said, kind of cuddles up with Silas, and Seiru is there and they're just kind of joking with him. Yeah, about time. I mean, I almost got upset at Dennis Undav for not allowing Angelo Stiller to hug him after he scored, because I'm like, this is a team, darn you. I mean, go, I'll let you talk. You can either talk about Silas, you can talk about the team aspect of it. I think it's overstated a little bit sometimes, but it does seem like there's a culture here, and it does seem like Silas is on his way back.
We've talked about in years past about how the guys haven't quit on each other, they didn't quit on Reno. And so I think there's some of that at the core of this. And now that they're getting to have success, it's not just that they're not quitting, it's that they're thriving together. And it's a lot of fun to see that. And Silas has been through so much with the injury that he had and the getting taken advantage of by that corrupt agent. And like, newcomers to Falafel, they may not know, when he came to us, his name was Silas Pomangatuka. And all of a sudden, we learned that was inaccurate. And just the dude has been through everything a footballer can be through. And to see him coming out and having some success, like, the players on the team know it better than any of us, because they see him every day on the training pitch and in the treatment room. And, you know, having had knee injuries in the past, like, it sucks. And it is just mentally punishing to have to come back from that and to do it as an elite tier athlete whose primary feature is how fast he can go. Like, that's got to just be soul crushing. So wonderful to see him get some success and to see how much his teammates support him and lift him up during this, what's been for him a pretty tough time, to not be scoring while the entire team is lighting goal records on fire.
Yeah, there was that goal that Undav scored off a Silas shot off the post. And he was just laughing because he's like, what do I have to do? So it was awesome to see him get a little bit of a result there. I mean, he looks bigger. He looks stronger. He looks faster than he's been in a number of years. I think we were all kind of surprised at how long it took him to get back from the knee injury, but everybody's body, you know, is a little bit different there. It was awesome to see the reaction of the entire club to him finally getting off the schneid there. So that was fantastic. The whole match, I mean, we didn't even get to talk about Wu Yangzheng coming basically just off the plane and getting an assist immediately, and Udav putting away just a clinical header to get the goal. Wow. So let's get to the final thoughts and reality here. So one of the things, I'm getting used to us killing time at the end of matches. This is crazy. As a Cleveland Browns football supporter, it's hard for me to get used to us taking the knee at the end of the match. This is crazy. Ross wrote in, he's like, the boys already have as many wins as they did all of last year. Let's go. Ross, you're right. I mean, we're second on the table. Let's talk about Sebastian Hoeneß for a second. His goal difference is 54 goals for, 24 against. He's only lost two. I don't even have to change this data from the last time I sent you notes. It's the same thing. Vertical Pass retweeted a great article from theanalyst.com that maybe we'll go over next week about his tactics and all that stuff. We talk about Hoeneß every week, and of course he's on this great run, but is there, really quickly, what is he doing that is making us be a top of the table team where people are talking about, listen, Bayern won, Dortmund won, Leipzig won, and Stuttgart won. The top five teams in the Bundesliga all won. And oh, by the way, did I mention Stuttgart? Because we're still at the top.
I wish I knew what Hoeneß did. I'd take it to work with me and you know, use it in my professional life. I would start coaching youth soccer here in Michigan and put it to work there and become a you know, 12 and under legend. I don't know. Whatever he's doing, I love it. He's pushing all the right buttons. He's got this team humming. It kind of feels like we've got the right coach with the right players at the right time. And that just, that's not something we've had for a really long time.
Yeah. Let's talk about the rest of the table. So like I mentioned, all the top teams, oh my gosh, I just mentioned us in the top one. The bottom teams, Mainz, Bochum, and Union Berlin, actually, to your point earlier, is listen, the schedule is the schedule. We got to play who we got to play, are all at the bottom. Cologne got a big derby win, so they're now moving up to 16th. I mean, we got 21 points. I mean, final thoughts on the week that was before we move on to some news and headlines.
The real surprise for me was Hoffenheim losing. They've been rolling, and I don't know. I fully expected them to come down with one and was really surprised to see that they didn't. So other than that, business as usual, as long as Stuttgart's winning, I don't really care.
That's right. F the rest of the table. It's all about us. All right, let's jump into part three, news and headlines. So here, I'll throw three things at you, Matt. So here we go. So we had a friendly versus Wiesbaden. Our streak continues. We haven't lost to a sub-Bundesliga team in like 10 matches. International play, Chris got 10 or 12 minutes versus the United States and Germany's win over the U.S. Wu Yang got some more goals in their friendly. Any comments or thoughts on any of those stories?
It's fun to see a Stuttgart player on the German national team, who I watch as closely as I do the U.S. national team. Hopeful Furch gets some more time and continues to be part of that. But the real story I felt was Wu Zhang, and dude just seemed to be playing lights out for South Korea. And what an opportunity for him. What a stage to do that on. And how exciting that we get to cheer about it vicariously because he's one of ours.
It's crazy too, because he was one of the best players in that tournament. Mm-hmm. And now he's coming back and he's getting off the bench because you're not going to take Enzo out of the match to put him in. So it's weird. We've got this guy who's one of the best players in Asia who's a sub. I mean, it's just, it's an embarrassment of riches right now.
It's, I'm really excited about the fact that we can potentially alternate him and Milo and get them both a little bit of rest through the season, not come into the end of the year completely on fumes, and have both of those guys putting up some numbers and getting plenty of playing time to feel like they're part and an important part of the team. And just, it's, man, it's just an exciting time to be a Stuttgart fan.
It's amazing to be in white and red right now. So it's, the Pokal's coming up. So we're going to play Union again, but we're going to play them at home. So speaking of the Pokal, so Balham asked, would you rather go out in the German Cup, early in the German Cup, but get top four finish, or finish seventh and have a really long cup win? I'm going to start with this one. If we finish in the top four, I would probably lose my mind. I don't know how I would handle a Champions League finish for us, because we would actually be able to watch those matches in the United States on actual regular person TV. The amount of money we would get would be a Malthagen for everybody at that point. We had a really nice run in the Pokal last year, which was cool. It was fun. Don't get me wrong. I loved every minute of it. If we finished fourth, I understand what's happened to Union Berlin. I get it. But I've been struggling as a Stuttgart supporter for a long time. That would be a dream for me. What about you?
So I'm going to take the opposite side of this. I think I would rather a deep Pokal run or win the Pokal and get some silverware and finish seventh. And get one more year to get some of these young guys a little more seasoning, maybe bring one or two more depth pieces in, and then make a serious run at Champions League next year.
Now, you didn't say we were going to win the Pokal. If we're going to win the Pokal, yeah, I'll take the Pokal win, but that's not fair.
I did, my only thing I worry about, the Union Berlin effect, right? We get into the Champions League before we're maybe ready for it. And we're leaning too much on a handful of guys, and they just get toasted by midseason.
Well, you know, I say this too, saying that we're going to have Seyru and Alex Neubel on the team. And most likely the next year we wouldn't have either of those guys. So it'd be like Luca Pfeiffer. And all right, thoughts on Wu Yang's role now that he's back. So we got a question. Love Seyru's run on the first goal. So he lost his pump fake, but the passing from Unovs was the best of the day. So what this question is alluding to is Wu Yang had a great chip pass to Undav. What kind of role do you think he's going to play now that he's back?
I think we're going to see kind of opponent dependent Wu Yang or Enzo Milo. And they're slightly different players. They've got a lot of similar skill sets, but they just go about business a little differently. So I'm expecting Honus to split their time. And I think that's totally fine. They both strike me as players that would be content with that and not pitch a hissy fit because they're not starting every week. So let's let them both cook. They're both playing really well. Use them both. Keep some miles off their legs, and victory for Valpe.
Kai in Iceland asks, can Valpe compensate for Seyru's injury? I'm very optimistic about this season with Undav and Young. We have really good offensive players. We have a much broader base. Last season, Garassi's injury was almost a catastrophe, but the nice thing is we can see what it will be like in January when he's in the Africa Cup. So we asked this question to the OFC, what amount of points would we score without him? And 50% said we'd score, but the option was between 0 to 12, so missing four matches. And 50% said we'd score between 4 to 6 without him. What do you think? How many points do you think we can score without Seyru in the four matches coming up that he's probably going to miss in November?
We've got Hoffenheim, who I think we can probably take, Union and the Pokal, who are falling apart, Heidenheim, Dortmund, Frankfurt. Dortmund and Frankfurt are really the only ones that worry me in that mess. So I think we could easily take 8 to 12 or 6 to 12 points. It's Jurassic is a one in a million talent. Don't get me wrong at all. But the way that we're scoring, the selflessness the players have, that Undav can finish, that Silas seems to be getting back in his feet. I feel like we'll be able to weather this. I don't think we'll be quite as dominant because it's not chuck the ball into Jurassic and watch him put it in the back of the net. But we can still score, and that's something we haven't been able to say for a long time.
What I really like about this question is it's going to show us what we would look like in January when Seiru's back, because we all knew he was going to go and we were all worried about that. My biggest bummer is I wanted him to have a run for the Golden Boot. I think that would be really cool if we're going into May and he has a chance to win that. Missing January because of the competition in Africa and missing about four matches because of his injury is probably going to put a dent in that. So I'm a little bummed about that a little bit, but I'm with you. If we could get two wins, so 6 points out of four matches, that's pretty good. I think almost every team would take that.
So Travis, he is missing some time from injury. He's going to miss some time for the Africa Cup, but he's got 14 goals right now. Guess how many the second best goal scorer in the league has?
The eight.
Good guess. Kane's got 9, and
Oh.
Boniface behind him has 7,
Okay.
and it's 7, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 5. But he's got such a lead on everybody. He could probably, he might come back from the Africa Cup of Nations, assuming he's healthy, be like, all right, let's pick it right back up and light everybody else on fire for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you and I put a tweet out about how this was a conspiracy theory that he's not hurt, that the Bundesliga is just having him sit down. So we could make it a race between that Harry Kane guy and him. So maybe you're right there.
I've got my red yarn out and my tinfoil hat. We're ready to connect all
Right.
these lines.
Baham asks, any plans for episode 100? And Matt, this is a surprise question. You didn't hear this one coming. Is Matt planning on buying a jersey for episode 100? I heard that he has Saudi money. I mean, what are you gonna do for episode 100? What are we gonna do? I have no ideas. I texted you before the show. I was like, I have no idea what to do. I didn't think we'd make it this long. I don't think anybody wanted us to make it this long. What do we do?
They can't shut us down, Travis. I wish I had Saudi money. If I had Saudi money, I would not only have complete foul fake kits from here to eternity, I would buy them all for all of you listening because I love you all so much. I don't know. I think we get great questions every week. I love the Q&A part. I think is one of the most fun parts of the podcast. Maybe we can come up with something to do for people who send in questions, where we can send a little love back. We've got some of the other rotating cast of characters who show up every now and then, Rob and Ted, Austin and Jeff. Maybe we can get some of the other guys on a little bit. It's, schedules are hard right now, and people have kids and lives, and the Saudis aren't funding everybody else. So, you all have to work. But yeah, I think just kind of a how we doing so far episode, maybe forget about reviewing the game and just how are things going might be interesting because things are going very differently than they have been for the past 10 years.
That'd be, yeah, sure. How are you doing in your life, Matt? A 30-minute, how's Matt doing?
Ooh, therapy session.
I'm sure that everybody's gonna. I think I've got a bunch of stuff from previous Valpe orders. I think I'm gonna package together some magnets, some pencils, nothing big. I do have a Valpe jump rope that maybe we'll put together for some kind of package deal for somebody who. Question number 18, 893. So I've got some swag we can maybe give away. We'll see there. So, Bob, we love the question. Love that you're listening. We'll see what we can do out there. So we got another question here. Doug asked about the green kit. So he asked, what was the meaning with the green kit? And I looked it up online before we recorded, and there's no real meaning to it. It does have images of the stadium on it, of the kits. This year, the home kit, the two away kits, which is your favorite kit?
This is going to probably be controversial. I like the green one the best of the three.
Ooh.
Not, I typically am default to the white shirt with the red ring. Not a big fan of the confetti look this year. Just it's fine. I get what they're going for with the kind of outline of the shield permeating out from the middle. It's just it's not for me.
Boy, the green kit has grown on me, mostly because we're winning all the time. So I think it's looking pretty good. But I'm with you. The red kit was really sharp. I'm a sucker for a white shirt with a red stripe. Yeah, that's pretty much my go-to
Guilty.
move here. Yeah. All right. So David asks, okay, this is a long one, but as an Auburn fan, we have a term called barning. This derives from their rivals. I'm going full barn on Stuttgart right now. Seiru, no Seiru, it doesn't matter. We're not losing again this year, next year, any year. What? Wonder what kind of liquor they sell down there in Georgia. We're winning it all now. Now that I have that out of my system, since we were without Seiru for a few weeks, I would like to see Undav paired with Silas a little more often. They've both been highly effective coming off the bench and worked magic both yesterday and against Cologne a few weeks ago. And then there's another question from frequent contributor Tim. If Grassi misses all of November, Valpi will need some serious scoring from Undav. Furch and Silas will need to make up for the missing goals. Hopefully the back line can continue to hold tight. So combine these two questions together. Basically, it's an Undav question, I think, is how confident are you with him being our new number nine?
I don't know. He's an unknown quantity up there. In the limited time we've seen him, he's played very, very well. So I'm not losing sleep that we're going to be relying on him for a little while. If it was Undav's the answer for the rest of the season, I think I'd be a lot more nervous. But Furch is playing better than he has ever has. We're talking about how Milo and Wu Zhang have been outstanding. And Silas coming off the Schneid. All Undav has to be is in the right place at the right time a little bit and pestering the back line and the opposing defense. And he's got help. So he doesn't have to do it all on his own. And I think that's going to make the difference for him.
I think it'll be interesting because Seiru is a classic nine, right? He can hold up the ball and get the play started. Undav is not a classic nine, but he does some of the same things, but he doesn't have the same size or physicality as Seiru does. So I think the move we're going to see is Undav is going to be in that spot up front. And they'll probably have the same lineup, but it'll be interesting to see how Honus kind of works the, it's Halloween, the witch's brew, to get those other guys to work without him. I love what Baham asked earlier is we were going to miss Seiru anyway, right? And it stinks we're missing him now. But this gives us an opportunity to see what we are going to be without him early because we were going to miss him in January. So to answer the question, I have constant confidence in Dennis Undav. He did it in the Premier League. He has done nothing but have success in this league. I think he's a different style player than Seiru is, but that doesn't mean he can't have success.
Yeah, I think he's got all the tools and all the pieces to be really good, and I think he's on a team that's going to support him, and a coach that's going to put him in a position to succeed and help build a game plan around his abilities. So I, as I said, I'm not worried about it yet. Talk to me again in 2 weeks. We'll see how I'm feeling, but I'm okay with this. I wouldn't want to ride him for a whole season, but for a couple weeks while Gerassi gets healthy, yeah, let's go. Give the young man some line and see how he does with it.
Last question. Ducks Armin asks, or actually states, everyone hoped for a boring season, and now we have to worry about staying in the Europa places. Clearly, we missed our goal for the season. Should Honus be sacked? I love this question 100%. Matt, should we fire everybody at this point for raising our expectation?
I think our friend Ducks Armin owns a pitchfork and torch store and is looking to drum up some business. No, this season is boring, is not boring at all. if anything, it's boring in the best way possible. We're up at halftime, and we can kind of drift off into Twitter land a little bit in the second half and not worry about the game, which is way better than thinking about my blood pressure and having my watch beep at me and being like, dude, what are you doing?
No, it's not looking. My phone automatically scrolls to the bottom of the table on FotMob, the app, as opposed to the top of the table, because it just doesn't know. So we do have another match going on. Let's dive into part four, our last segment. Valpy hosting Hoppenheim. All right, Matt, so we've got the match that we always ask, is this a derby or is it not a derby? So we are 11-9-7 against these guys from Hoppenheim. I'll ask you first, derby or no derby?
Let's say yes. Ooh. And here's why.
Hot take.
Hoffenheim is about 90 kilometers down the road from Stuttgart. It takes about an hour to drive, which is how we measure distance in the Midwest. Their head coach is our former head coach. They have Dieter Hopp, who's a detestable figure for a number of different reasons. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons to needle Hoffenheim, and they're close enough that I think we can fairly call it a derby. So let's have a derby with a team that's easy to make fun of, because it's fun. And this is all about having fun.
Yeah, we're surrounded now. We got Freiburg, Heidenheim, Hoffenheim, right? I mean,
and Freiburg, we've talked about Freiburg. They're impossible to hate. There's just nothing to get worked. They don't have a Dieter Hopp type character who's kind of detestable.
Yeah, Christian Streich is somewhat, you can mock him, but he's been there for 1,000 years. So it's like,
you can mock him, but if Freiburg if Honus ascended the stairs to Valhalla and they said, hey, we're bringing in Strike to replace him, I go, okay.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to go buy a flat cap. This will be cool. Let's go.
Right. So it's weird. I always, Hoffenheim is plastic. I get it. But with all the connections you just mentioned, Honus coached there, Reno coached here, Stiller played there, Ozan Kabak plays there and played for us.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ties. So last year there were two draws. Seiru and Endo had two goals and a heartbreaker. They scored a late goal against us. And then Thiago Tomas scored a late goal to get us the draw. So it was 1-1 in that match for 2 points between the two. They just lost 1-3 against Frankfurt, and Reno was lamenting their bad defense in that match, but they're still six on the table. So he's done amazing there. They're actually, this is what scares me, Matt. They're way better on the road than at home. They're 4-0 on the road. They're only 1-3 at home. That's bonkers. You never see that in the Bundesliga. You've kind of already told me what you think about Hoffenheim, but thoughts about this match, and then what do you think the predictions are going into this one?
They've been good on the road, but they haven't played in, is it MPH, MHP, whatever. They haven't played in the former Mercedes-Benz Arena. Where our fans are so great that they make road games home games. And the place is just going to be ready to burst. The ultras are going to be behind the team because Jirossi's not there, and they know they're going to need a little extra support. I have complete faith that the team's going to take care of business, and I just think we're straight better than Hoffenheim.
It's crazy to think that. And it, going back just a step, the away supporters were so loud on ESPN Plus, they were drowning out that stadium. It's amazing how they're able to do that. If I get a ticket to an away match, I don't know if I would sit in the away block, because I don't think I have the vocal cords for 90 minutes to do what those guys do. It was crazy. They were so, you could hear it on the TV, how loud it was. So to your point, I think the home crowd is a big difference maker in this one. We are on an amazing run of form. Derek Ray said it against the Union game. History versus form, right? Neon's history was way better against us, but our form was way better, and we proved it in that match. And the spread in this one, you know, we're the home team. We'd love to put you on the spot. Who do you think is the favorite, and what do you think by how much?
I think we're the favorite, but probably it should probably be by a goal, but I'm going to say by half a goal.
Oh, you 100% nailed it. Half a goal. Yes. In this one. And you are in second place in our predictions. You have nailed all but one of your outbeat predictions. What do you think the score is going to be in this one? Who you got?
I think it's going to be 2-1, good guys.
We've had a couple clean sheets in a row now. I mean, our defense has played pretty well.
I think Silas gets his second, and I think Wuzhong brings his Korean magic and nails one.
Who do you think is going to be the starting lineup? I mean, the easy answer is Undav in for Seiru, but Wuzhong, probably a late sub. I mean, you can't put him in the starting lineup at this point.
No, I think Undav in for Jirasi. Silas maybe in for Leveling, because Leveling had a little bit of a rough game. Not bad, just not great. And then depending on if, I think Milo and Furich up front to finish it off, with Wuzhong coming in as a late sub for Enzo to see what happens. The defense is going to be interesting to see if we continue to go with Middle Shot and Ruo at the corners, or if we see Stenzo and Ito back out there. I would be hard pressed to see Ruo removed from the starting lineup at this point. But if Ito's back, you got to put Ito in.
Yeah, Rulo's been playing lights out for a young kid who none of us knew his name. And we don't know whether it's Rulo or Rulo at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm still not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. So.
I know. I'm going to take 2-0 good guys in this one. I think our defense is playing lights out. Hoffenheim struggling a little bit. So I like our chances to keep the good run going. 24 points. Matt, last thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
I'm just having fun soaking in the victory and the awesomeness and how much fun this team is having. I know we keep beating this drum, but these guys are playing for each other and playing for us, and it just makes it so, so enjoyable to watch. This is a very, very easy team to cheer for.
You know what's also easy is shipping. Do you think my jersey is showing up from Germany yet that Hervig sent me?
Oh, hard no. It's not going to be here until next year.
No, you're right. 100%. Ohio gets nothing from Germany ever. Oh, well.
There is some person at the import-export office in New York who sees your package and goes, ugh.
I don't know what I did to upset that person in New York, but it happened. Oh, well. Well, all right. So that's episode 99. We're looking forward to coming back with episode 100. We have no idea what we're going to do, but we have some ideas, which is, I guess, one idea. But Matt, thanks so much for joining me this episode. Hopefully next week we can talk after, I mean, I keep saying this is our catchphrase, after another big Val Bay win. What do you say?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And the fact that we're unprepared for 100th episode is very on brand for us.
Oh my God, that's so perfect. I didn't even think about that. Well done, sir. That's a perfect exit. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.